stuck in an emergency bed and breakfast to person terrified of another night sleeping rough. Polyneed said, with private rents and living costs continuing to soar, thousands of people are not just facing a winter of worry, they're at risk of losing the roof over their head. Polyneed added, at Shelter, we are bracing ourselves for a sharp rise in homelessness in 2023. More than ever, we'll be relying on the public's generosity to help us support and campaign for all those fighting for a safe home. Figures from the charity show that the rate of homelessness in London last year was nearly three times higher than England as a whole, which saw one in 208 on the streets. Councillor Darren Rodwell, London Council's executive member for Regeneration, Housing and Planning, said these devastating figures reveal that London remains the epicentre of the homelessness crisis in Britain. Darren Rodwell added, everyone deserves a permanent home, but the chronic shortage of affordable housing in the capital means too many Londoners find themselves homeless and reliant on temporary accommodation arranged by their local council. The numbers are so high that they're equivalent to the entire population of a London borough. The website of Inside Housing has also covered the same story. According to new research by Shelter, one in 100 children in England are homeless and living in temporary accommodation. Shelter's analysis found that 26% of the parents of the 120,710 children reported their children are unhappy or depressed as a result of living in temporary accommodation, while many are forced to share beds. Shelter expects the number of homeless children to grow as the cost of living crisis deepens the housing emergency. Recently, Inside Housing's research revealed that more than 26,000 children under the age of five are homeless and living in temporary accommodation in England. Temporary accommodation, which can take the form of emergency hostels, bed and breakfast, one-room bedsits and cramped flats, is provided by councils to eligible families who become homeless. It is not designed as permanent accommodation, and families can be asked to move numerous times on short notice. The latest government data shows that 5,030 families are living in emergency bed and breakfast and hostel rooms, widely considered the worst type of temporary accommodation. Shelter study, the largest ever conducted and funded by Trust for London and the Joseph Rantree Foundation, involved more than 800 families with 1,600 children living in temporary accommodation throughout England. It looked at the impact of temporary accommodation on children's health, on children's well-being and education. It found that more than a third, or 35%, of homeless parents say their child or their children do not have a bed of their own and must share with another family member. Almost half, or 45%, of school-age children have arrived at school tired, late or hungry as a result of living in temporary accommodation. Bed and breakfasts and hostels are often not equipped with suitable or any facilities for parents to cook meals, and noise from other residents and bed-sharing mean children often struggle to sleep. Parents reported that just over 60% of children lack space to play in their temporary accommodation. One in four parents, or about 28%, said their children are finding it hard to make or keep friends as a result of living in temporary accommodation. This can be because they're embarrassed or ashamed of where they live, because they're unable to have friends over to play due to a lack of space or rules that forbid visitors. Sky News has also covered the same story and tells us more. A Scottish charity has raised the alarm about the potential of a notable rise in the death rate among the homeless in Scotland, as the entire United Kingdom grapples with a worsening economic crisis. The Simon Community Charity issued the warning as Scotland is still reeling from hundreds of homeless deaths that were registered last year. The network reported recent official figures from the National Records of Scotland reveal an estimated 250 homeless people died last year, which is around 50% higher than in 2017. Lorraine McGrath, the charity's chief executive, said it is a worsening position over the last 3 to 4 years, which is a massive concern. Lorraine McGrath added, the vast majority of these people are under the age of 45, adding, that is because of the massive health inequalities they face and the stress on their body that leads to premature aging, that in turn leads to long-term conditions that may well be easily treatable. Lorraine McGrath added, people experiencing homelessness don't enjoy the same access to healthcare, which increases their risk of early death. Britain's year-on-year inflation rate stands at 10.7%, the highest in 4 decades. Meanwhile, the inflationary spiral is growing at a much faster pace than the average wage rise across the country. Food prices have skyrocketed almost 20%. Rising energy prices, along with soaring energy costs, have also largely contributed to Britain's cost of living crisis. Many labour unions have launched industrial action to press the government to enact wage hikes. The government, however, refuses to increase the wages, saying it would increase inflation. The government blames the economic doldrums partly on the COVID-19 pandemic, saying the country had been having a hard time recovering from the stagnation that used to govern the period. Experts, however, fault leadership incompetence and turbulence that saw the country changing several prime ministers over the past 2 years.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means
today I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decree.
His decree though we learn.
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip, what is the value of a salah, a wajib obligatory prayer, when it is not accepted as regards to our ubudiyah, our service, our worship, and our obedience to Allah? So, dear friends, we are humbly talking about ubudiyah, the servitude, the worship, and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. And of course, in this session, we want to talk about whether a salah, a prayer that we do, namely the 5 daily prayers, can it be such that it is not accepted and it does not bring us closer to the presence of the Almighty Allah? Now, first and foremost, we must realize that the purpose of the salah and the 5 daily prayers is a form of ubudiyah, And perhaps it can be said that it is the best form of ubudiya. And now, why is it the best form of ubudiya? Well, first and foremost, because the Almighty Allah has made it incumbent upon us, He has made it obligatory upon us, to do this worship and to do this ubudiya to the Almighty Allah 5 times a day. And at the same time, we find that the salah is known as the mi'raj of the mu'min. It is known as the ascension of the mu'min. And so the salah does definitely have a very, very important place when it comes to our ubudiya, our service, our worship, and our obedience to the Almighty Allah. Of course, as the Holy Quran has said in its verses, that humanity and human beings have been created for the worship to Allah. And so one of the goals and the purposes of the creation of humanity and one of the goals of a human being is to worship the Almighty Allah. Now here, of course, this salah and this prayer, this obligatory prayers that must be done by an individual will not be accepted by the Almighty Allah if it is a very hollow and a very empty and a very deformed and darkened form, right? And it will also not bring one closer to the presence of the Almighty Allah. Now, you might think, well, what kind of a salah does this? Well, primarily, the kind of salah which becomes deformed or becomes corrupted, of course, is one that is done without sincerity. It is done without focus and without attention. It is done without presence of mind and presence of heart. And sometimes is done just in order to get it out of the way and get rid of it and not have to worry about it. Or it is done out of laziness or tiredness, or there's no eagerness in it. There's no zeal. There's no fervor. There's no excitement. There's no emotion in this salah. Now, of course, one can't always be at the peak of these kind of things that we just listed. I mean, people have ups and downs, people have good days, people have bad days. But we're talking about on the average, right? And an average which should eventually, over the passing of time, move upwards towards an ideal form of salah and worship. And so it is this kind of salah and this kind of worship that will bring you near to the Almighty Allah.
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
We as individuals and in our lives, especially within our families, we need to be people who talk about Allah. And we need to talk about the Ahlul Bayt, especially the Imam of our time. What I mean by this is that we need to create an environment where Allah is present. Right? They say that the daughter of Allama Tabatabai says in one interview that our father, Allama Tabatabai, used to talk about Allah so much and remind us that He was present and watching over us that we used to think it would be impossible to do an action without feeling the presence of Allah. Right? That's the way it should be. That environment should be one where we're talking about Allah. You see, brothers and sisters, the way that our children are taught, the way that we ourselves were taught in the educational system, is a way that God has been stripped away from the equation, right? When you learn about the way that the universe operates, for example, you learn about the water cycle. All of you have, or you know, at one time will study about the water cycle, and you learn about how, you know, that the earth how water moves about in the earth, from rains, from clouds, from water supplies in the earth, right? And people drink it, and whatever, it just goes in a cycle. The whole time you learn about that, or you learn about any of the other facts or theories about science, whether it be the way the human body works, or whether it be evolution, right? The whole time you read about it and learn about it, God is stripped away. But if you look at the language of the Quran talks about some of these same scientific phenomena, but it does so with a different language. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Furqan 25, verse number 48, وَأَنزَلْنَا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً. We are the ones who send down water from the sky. Who's taking credit for it? Right? Who is this action being attributed to? Is it that the clouds, rain is falling from the clouds? Or is it that Allah is causing rain to fall from the clouds? So if it's raining outside, right, as a believer, I should mention, thank Allah for sending us this rain. This simple statement will find a place in the hearts of our children and it won't leave. Surah 35, verse 9. فَأَحْيَيْنَا بِهِ الْأَرْضَ بَعْدَ مَوْتِهَا. With this water, we cause the dry earth to come to life again. Springtime comes along. I see greenery. I should mention it. I should attribute it to Allah. I said that we should not only talk about Allah, but also about the Ahlul Bayt, especially the Imam of our time. We should be people who frequently are remembering the Imam of our time. In a hadith, we're told that, this is from the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Sadiq, he says that you should go and visit one another. And that you should mention our affair. You should mention us, mention the Ahlul Bayt, mention the Imam of our time. Even when we get together for a social gathering. Right? In another tradition, we're told that that we should make sure that we should, even if we gather together, and we don't say salawat in that gathering will be a source of regret for us in the hereafter.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah,
ya Allah, ya Mannan, haqqiq
amani. IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amani. أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير، أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
يا الله يا رحمن حقق أمانينا ووفقنا في كل آن في مسائنا.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were talking about, of course, which was how the salah, if not done properly, can turn into a very deformed and darkened form, and of course it won't bring us nearness to the Almighty Allah, which is the ultimate purpose of the salah, the daily prayers. We also talked about how the salah, the daily prayers, the obligatory daily prayers, which a Muslim prays five times a day, they are in fact known as the mi'raj of the mu'min. And it can be said that this salah, in its pure form, is probably one of the most perfect forms of ubudiyah, the obedience and the service and the worship to Allah. Now, this salah has also been known to be one of the great divine trusts. And of course, it has been the advice of the great prophets of the past, including the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And of course, the awsiya and the awliya of Allah, the executors and the successors of the Prophet's wills, and of course, the near ones to Allah, the close ones to Allah. And it would truly be very unfortunate if we allow the treacherous hands of the accursed shaitan, who is the enemy of Allah and who is the enemy of humanity, to deform and darken and water down our salah. And so, of course, Shaitan knows that the Salah is one of the means in which we can gain nearness to the Almighty Allah. And likewise, we can gain honor in the presence of the Almighty Allah. We can gain rewards in the presence of the Almighty Allah. And we can be the select favorites of the Almighty Allah via these kind of ubudiyas, and namely this salah, the five daily prayers. And so Shaitan does his best to be able to create some kind of problems within this. Either we end up praying late, or we don't pray at all, or we don't pray on time, or if we do pray, our mind is in a million different places. We have no focus in our salah. We don't pay any attention to what we are saying. We don't pay attention to the different movements that are being done. It's quite interesting if a human being, if you and I were to really just kind of focus on even the movements, standing still, for example, in the presence of the Almighty Allah, bowing down in the presence of the Almighty Allah, and then eventually going into prostration and doing sajda in the presence of the Almighty Allah. How beautiful these different movements are. One, to be standing straight and, like a soldier in front of the Almighty Allah. And the second is the ruku, in which one humbles themselves and bows in front of the majesty and the glory of the Almighty Allah. And that majesty and glory is so overwhelming that an individual falls into prostration. And so Shaitan comes and tries to destroy all of these things, destroy the state of mind, so that an individual will not reach the heights of ubudiyah, the heights of the worship and the service and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. My today topic is about the importance of being friendly to others. As usual, I need to add that whatever I say is based on the Quran and Islamic traditions. Being pleasant and friendly to others and being nice and polite when we are with others can attract many achievements to us. A cheerful man, or in better words, someone who is behaving in a way that shows he is happy, can light up the room. He can inspire others to achieve their goals. Such a person can bring a feeling of felicity and happiness, and a feeling of well-being and contentment wherever he goes. Being cheerful involves a positive perspective on life for both the man who is cheerful and others who are with him. By being cheerful, it does not mean that the man is really happy and that he does not have any concern and problems in his life. Rather, to show happiness means that someone behaves in such a way to conceal his problems and do not show it to others. There could be someone who is sad, someone who is in predicament situations, but does not let others realize it and behave in such a way to not let others understand it. And this is the manner of acting that a cheerful man does. Unfortunately, many of us tend to focus on our problems. And in addition, we usually take our blessings and achievements for granted. And this is really problematic. Yes, it is natural to think about the difficulties we face and the challenges we have in our life. But it is natural, if we want to realize them, to think about them in order to overcome them. But if we focus more on the negative side of our life, there is a real danger that it may let us down. It would make us unsatisfied with the blessings we have in our life. But if we pay more attention to the positive part of the way we are living, it will give us a positive lift, and gradually paying attention to the positive side of our life will become a fixed habit for us. As a result, we will behave in a way that shows we are blessed, we are happy, and totally fortunate. This attitude has a positive effect of human behavior, and gradually, when we are with others, we treat them satisfactorily.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
As I said several times, we have this experience in our life that based on the law of attraction, positive feeling catches positive signals and delivers happiness to others. As a result, being pleasant and friendly also make other people happy and let them feel better. When we make an effort to be more cheerful, we can sense that life is becoming easier. We feel we have more energy. We are more motivated. And being cheerful let our general well-being and outlook improve. By being friendly, we can improve the whole atmosphere as well. Our feeling dominates the atmosphere, just as the miserable person can let the spirit of other people down. Similarly, a cheerful people can brighten them and make everyone feel lighter and happier. For example, a teacher who behaves in a satisfactory way helps his student to be more confident, less stressful. His students are more confident to speak in the class. The student in a cheerful environment can learn more, offer better ideas, and offer better thoughts. Imam Ali has got an interesting saying in this regard and accentuates on the point that how being friendly can attract others' attention. The Imam says in a short but meaningful sentence, "Al-bashashatu hibalatul mawaddah." To be friendly is like a trap that is set by the person to catch love and kindness. Undoubtedly, pleasant and well-mannered people who deal with others with open faces and smiling lips, they will have many friends. And on the contrary, people who face others with a tense, sullen, and angry face, others do not love them, and they detest to be with them. Just imagine a society that its people show pleasance and satisfaction, that how much this society can be a good environment for positive movement and positive activity. Here I need to again repeat that by showing joyfulness and cheerfulness, I don't want to say that we try just to be like an actor or an actress who is playing and performing a role, not at all. The reality of what I am going to point is that we need to train ourselves in such a way that when we are with other people, do not convey our sorrows and depression to them. Do not transfer our problem to them and do not let them be aware that we have problem in our life. With just a simple smile on face, especially when we see other people, when we are with our friend, we can sense that our friend gains energy, feels better, feels that something good is going to happen in his life. Just this, with a simple smile and an open face. We do not need to use up our energy to show happiness, to show positivity. Not at all. You should not be that much energetic to show that, to pretend to be a good man. No, just a simple smile, just a warming greeting, just not to frown, not to turn sour, not to look bad-tempered. This is sufficient and is enough. It is also narrated from the Prophet to have said, Ya Bani Abdul Muttalib, or the offspring of Abdul Muttalib. They were the Prophet's relatives from the tribe of Quraysh. Innakum lan tasa'u an-nas bi'amwalikum. You cannot assist to help people with your wealth and property, because people's need is much higher than your wealth. فَأَلْغُوهُمْ بِطَلَاقَةَ الْوَجْحِ وَحُسْنِ الْبِشْرِ. But instead, meet them with an open face and cheerfulness. Wealth would not be sufficient to meet people's need, but kindness is an imperishable capital and a source of happiness for people. In many cases, we have seen that when we see a friend or a relative and smile at them, they also smile at us and feels pleased. So far we were talking about how important being cheerful and friendly to others is. Unfortunately, the time is ending, and inshallah, if we have time, we will talk about this topic in another situation. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he knows. Allah
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Russian influence is growing in Africa. From West Africa in countries such as Mali and Burkina Faso to South Africa, the continent's most advanced economy, Western propaganda to isolate Russia has failed miserably. A demonstrator in the Central African Republic, a former French colony, says Russia has played a positive role in his country.
We recognize a friend in suffering. When we were in crisis, it was Russia that came to our rescue to liberate the country. We saw France, which was there but did nothing, and France continues to bully us. We have to tell certain truths today. Russia is coming to liberate us. Now we are free, and we must support Russia at all cost until our last breath. Russia came to our country in the moment of crisis. Our country has suffered. Our country has been mistreated by the rebels. And that is why we came to support Russia.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. Today, we are focusing on the unfolding Cold War in Africa between Russia and Western powers. African countries are, meanwhile, reasserting their independence while rejecting Western imperialism and neocolonialism. We're asking, will African countries succeed in their move to stop Western powers intent on meddling and countering Russia in the continent? The second part of our show today will be on continuing exploitation of Western and Central African countries by France through the CFA franc currency. Our experts today will give us their incisive analysis on these two subjects, and you can be part of the conversation by sending us your comments through our social media handle.
Russia-West new Cold War in Africa. Russia has been making diplomatic inroads in African countries that were seen as backyards of Western neocolonial powers, especially France. The US-led NATO military alliance has been angered by Russia's increasing influence in Africa, particularly at this time that the alliance is indirectly engaged in a military conflict with Russia in Ukraine.
Most African countries have refused to back NATO in its conflict with Russia. In fact, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has blamed NATO for the war in Ukraine.
The war could have been avoided if NATO had heeded the warnings from amongst its own leaders and officials over the years that its eastward expansion would lead to greater, not less, instability in the region.
Well, to discuss increasing neo-Cold War rivalry between Russia and NATO in Africa, we have contacted Nefta Freeman, a coordinating committee member of the Black Alliance for Peace. Thanks for your time today. Now, over the recent months, we have seen a flurry of diplomatic activity with top-ranking U.S. and Russian officials visiting Africa while Germany unveiled a new strategy for Africa. Now, are we witnessing a new Cold War in Africa amid the NATO-Russia conflict in Ukraine?
Yes, the heightened engagement with Africa is unquestionably a part of a new Cold War by the West, led by the United States. It has been waging a Cold War against Russia and China in particular. So this is playing out in Africa as a new scramble for Africa. Africa remains central to the global markets, supply of raw materials, and has become also a place of exporting finished goods to. But over the last decade, the competition has been increasingly militarized, notably with the U.S.-NATO destruction of Libya in 2011, mm-hmm. and turning Africa into really pretty much a hotbed of violent and extremist activity, giving the U.S. this and other Western countries, France and whatnot, this pretext to say, well, they have to help African countries with militarization, AFRICOM, U.S. Africa Command, and the French Foreign Legion, and these to come and stop the violent extremism that in fact, the U.S. is responsible, NATO is responsible for.
Uganda President Yoweri Museveni hosted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and said he saw no reason to criticize Russia over its military operation in Ukraine. Museveni said Russia has a long history of backing African liberation when the continent was colonized by Western colonial powers.
The Africans started organizing, led by new forces. And the first group was in South Africa in 1912, when the African National Congress was founded. That was the modern African anti-colonial resistance movement. Fortunately, and that's how Russia comes in 1917, a new force took over Russia. These were the Bolsheviks. I don't know what problems you have with the Bolsheviks, whether you like them or you don't, but for us, we appreciate them because they supported us. They started supporting our anti-colonial struggle. And that is our relationship with Russia. Russia, so the Soviet Union, supporting the anti-colonial movement in Africa.
Russian foreign minister visited Africa in February, and this was his third visit to the continent after the start of Moscow's special military operation in Ukraine. Analysts believe that Western powers are using strong arm tactics to counter Russia in Africa.
It appears that Russia is succeeding, and I think that has more to do with the insistence of the United States and the Western countries, but particularly the United States, of using like strong arm tactics. That's traditionally what it does. That's also what characterizes neo-colonialism, using sanctions, using the international monetary, and the sanctions are actually exercised through the financial institutions. A lot of them are exercised also by the IMF and the World Bank and whatnot. And so they insist on not respecting the sovereignty of African countries. African countries should be able to have their own relationships with whoever they so choose, but the U.S. wants to dictate that. And so when Sergei Lavrov comes, and they actually are coming after the heels of, in December, the U.S. Africa's Leaders Summit that happened in Washington, D.C. in December did not have the expected results that the U.S. wanted. Them trying to, kind of court African leaders to take their sides in the world in this global competition for things. So the U.S. is becoming more overt in their strong arm policy.
Addressing the media after meeting his Eritrean counterpart, Osman Saleh, in February, Lavrov said Russia favors the principle of African solutions to African problems.
We had a detailed discussion of the African agenda. We have pointed out the need to normalize the situation in the conflict hotspots of Africa. We paid special attention to the situation in the African Horn region. We, together with our Eritrean friends, believe that in order to overcome the regional crisis, we require the promotion of a comprehensive approach through coordinated actions of the African states themselves, with the support from the international community. We have confirmed that Russia, including in its status as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, will continue making its contribution to strengthening security and stability in the African continent, based upon the well-known principle, African solutions for African problems. We shall not impose any external solutions to the Africans, and we see numerous attempts of doing that.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also said that Western media outlets have been distorting facts while covering his tour across sub-Saharan Africa. Now, what's your take on this statement by Lavrov?
Well, they have to distort facts. The U.S., I think the U.S. and the leadership, the ruling class of the United States, because it's not regular people, believe their own perceptions about the world. This comes from a colonial mindset. But also at the same time, they have to sidestep the hypocrisy that they practice, the double standards they practice. One of the things, and I can remember this one distortion of facts, which is really an odd one, is to say, Russia and Lavrov are only visiting countries where there's rich mineral resources in Africa. This doesn't really make any sense to anyone who understands Africa. Every place in Africa is rich in mineral resources. It's not really a place you can go that you're not going to be able to, you know, to have some go to some place that doesn't have rich mineral resources.
South African Defense and Military Veterans Minister Thandi Medise has hit out against the United States for trying to bully African countries from doing business with Russia. Medise said the Countering Malign Russian Activities in Africa Act, which seeks to sanction any African businesses or people doing business with Russia, should be rejected by African countries. More African countries are expected to defy the West.
I think we will see more, and we have seen more of the West, and a lot of it was when I mentioned earlier the U.S. Africa Leaders Summit, where they invited a lot of these leaders to Washington, D.C. Some of those deliberations, people, the African country, were talking about how, you know, how the U.S. is not really respecting the self-determination. I don't know if they use the word self-determination, but the rights of African countries to do business how they see fit. And that it was much along the lines of strong-arming and what we call, in the Black Lives Matter piece, we refer to it as gangsterism because that's what it is. But you're seeing a lot of what the African countries are more likely to defy it because the other forces, China, Russia, even to whoever you can name, other forces beside the U.S. and besides the Western NATO countries, and people can talk about what their interests are, what their real interests are or not, but they come with a different, they come differently. Their bilateral relationships, their agreements. The U.S. is a gangster, and the NATO, they're gangster countries. They, and we've referred to that meaning they impose their will.
A tweet by the German Foreign Ministry in which it used a leopard emoji in referring to the Russian Foreign Minister's visit to Africa has created uproar in Africa after it appeared offensive to some. Now, can such a tweet be indicative of Germany's colonial stereotypical view on Africa?
It certainly can be indicative of it. I don't know what was in their mind. I mean, Germany and the Western countries, they come out of a legacy of colonization and a dehumanization of Africa. They do not respect African, you know, African culture, African anything. And they even can't even take responsibility for the underdeveloped state that Africa is in terms of where there's poverty and these kind of things. They don't take responsibility for that. And it's directly at the shoulders of Europe and the U.S., neocolonialism former colonialism or formal colonialism as described by, if we could look at like the seminal work of scholars like Walter Rodney and the book of How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, and even the works of like Kwame Nkrumah talking about neocolonialism and outlining the effects of neocolonialism.
South African Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor defended the decision during a joint media briefing alongside her visiting Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, who is in the country for bilateral talks.
All countries conduct military exercises with friends worldwide. So there should be no compulsion on any country that it should conduct them with any other partner. It's part of a natural course of relations between countries. So I think we need to explain this to the public.
Now, what message is this military drill sending to Western countries?
These joint military operations in the U.S. has embarked on this, you know, this militarization of the continent through the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM. It's since 2008, maybe starting in 2007, where it has all of this, you know, military bases around, and the rhetoric around rhetoric or even its maneuvers around countering China, and then the legislation countering Russia. This sends the message to the West, these new developments with the naval drills, is that we don't consider you the hegemon anymore, or even the right to be the hegemon, and that we're not going to take sides also in the war between these forces.
Very well put there. Africa is reasserting its independence, and the joint naval drills by the South African Navy with Russia and China are a pointer to this new realignment of power in Africa. We now take a short break before our next topic on the CFA franc.
CFA franc, French colonial tax in Africa. You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
The CFA, which stood for French Colonies in Africa in 1945, now stands for Africa Financial Community. It is used in 14 African countries with a combined population of about 150 million and $235 billion USD of gross domestic product.
The CFA franc limits monetary sovereignty. France guarantees the value of the CFA franc, and in return, the countries that use it are required to at least 50% of their foreign exchange reserves with the French Treasury. Because the exchange rate between the CFA franc and euro is fixed, the central banks of the two CFA franc zones need to follow the monetary policies of the European Central Bank in order to maintain the peg. In other words, the European Central Bank effectively sets interest rates for countries that use the CFA franc.
The CFA franc is seen as a clear example of how France pursues a deliberate policy of continuing to plunder the countries it once colonized. Dr. Arikana Chihombori-Kwao, a former African Union ambassador to the U.S., weighs in here on how the CFA franc has disadvantaged African countries.
France is taking out of Africa, Francophone Africa, over $500 billion. Over $500 billion. We, the Africans, the poor countries, we are giving France over $500 billion a year. Year in, year out. And no one is talking about it. The latest figures are saying for every $14 billion that France takes out of Africa, by the time they finish investing it, they are realizing upwards of $300 billion for every $14 billion. So in actuality, France is taking out of Africa trillions of dollars year in, year out.
Now for more on this continued exploitation of Africa by France, we have contacted Mustafa Traore, an academic and political commentator. Thanks for your time today. Now, the CFA franc is seen as a vestige of French colonialism in Africa and has been referred by many as a sort of colonial tax on African countries. So why is this currency still being used in parts of Central and Western Africa?
It is true that it is a colonial currency. The reason why it is still used, it is because it is in the interest of France. We know that each time we had an African leader willing to change the situation to go out of the France FA, this politician was eliminated. So we understand that the mechanism of the France FA was inherited from the time of the Nazi regime. It is the Nazi regime who first used it against the French government, against the French nation. And then after the Second World War, the French used the same system, the system that was used by the Nazi against the Africans.
Former Burkina Faso President Thomas Sankara opposed the CFA system
because he believed that it was part of the economic stagnation that country endured. CFA franc is indeed the source of economic backwardness of Western and Central African countries, especially considering the fact that those countries using this currency are some of the poorest in the world.
Now, many analysts believe that the CFA franc was meant to control the cost of access to raw materials from the colonies and enable Paris to maintain its grip on the economies of these African countries. Now, can you elaborate further on some of the advantages France gets in ensuring African countries continue using the CFA franc?
Yeah, they can buy, they decide. They decide on what on the prices, which means that if something is too expensive, you can say, okay, I'm going to devaluate your currency, and now this is what your money is worth. So, and the thing is that the African currency is printed in France. Can you imagine? So it is printed in France. So, which means that this is what I sometimes explain to some of my students, because I teach English economics. And I tell to my students that there's nothing that the French government cannot buy in these countries, because they have the printing machine. Once you have the printing machine, nothing exists on earth in these countries that the French government cannot buy.
French President Macron is trying to influence the renaming of the CFA franc to ECO, after the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, decided that a new regional currency will take effect in 2027. Some ECOWAS members not using CFA franc have rejected French influence in the transition to a new currency. France is apparently sabotaging a strong and independent common African currency in West and Central Africa.
What is very surprising here is the fact that France wants to have its word on it. Okay, we are dealing with African countries. It's their currency. So it's not to the French president to say how they are going to name the new currency and what they are going to do. Okay, if the African decides, if the Africans decide to change the currency, to change the system, they are free to do it. But France wants to be part of it. And what the Africans are saying, that they do not want you to be part of it. And the first people are the first countries to oppose the participation of France in that new currency are the English-speaking countries, okay? Those who are not using the franc CFA. So that's very important. So we know that, and it's not me saying it, it was former President Jacques Chirac who once said it, without some African countries, France is nothing.
Demonstrators take to the streets regularly in several French-speaking African cities to reject the CFA currency, saying it prevents development and is keeping countries in poverty.
We must do all it takes to ensure that the CFA franc is abolished forever.
With the growing unpopularity of France in Africa and the younger generation's rejection of its presence, are we going to see more demands for the dumping of the CFA franc?
Yes, I think so. I think, yeah, this is what is very likely to happen. Many countries are trying to set free from, let's say, the chains of France. We saw it in Mali, in Burkina Faso, and Guinea. And I'm sure that is good. We will have more countries trying to reject the French influence. And they do it first militarily, and the next step is the currency. So for sure, that is the next step.
Well, there you have it. Many African countries are going to free themselves from the shackles of French neocolonialism. I'd like to thank our guest, Mustafa Traore, for his insight today. That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's been great having you. Goodbye for now.